Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Hi, darling. There's someone at the door. I'll call
Don't
you.
Don't answer it. Get away from the door, Mama. Go to the panic button in the bedroom. Mama. Okay, have you found it?
Yes. It's not working.
Press both buttons.
It's not working.
Go to the alarm panel by the front door.
But they're still there.
It's okay, don't worry. Don't worry, Mama. It's okay. Okay, you there?
Alex, they're still there.
Press any number.
What number?
Any number, Mama. The year I was born.
Nothing's happening.
Right, now press zero.
There you go. That's a clip from McMafia, currently running on BBC One. John Fardy rejoins us once again. And this is an interesting one in the sense that the original book, McMafia, was a non-fiction book. But this, to all intents and purposes, is it a fictionalized account of that, or is it fairly...
It's Happy New Year, by the way.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
I came
seriously,
in
John.
Purposely
yeah,
just
yeah.
so you do that. It's hard to describe in terms of what relation it has to the book, because McMafia was this non-fiction book, as you say, all about kind of the globalized nature of particularly Russian crime and all the post-Soviet kind of stuff. And this... the writers have said is based on that,
yeah.
but they've invented a whole new story, loosely, very loosely based on some of the people mentioned in that book. So it's hard to actually answer that question. It's roughly the source material. The idea is the same in that, you know, crime in Russia is spreading its tentacles all around the world, and it's, you know, putting money through very legitimate places in very expensive parts of the world, like Belgravia and London and stuff like that. So the results are kind of the same. But this is very much a piece of fiction in that it features a young son of a kind of, you get the impression, disgraced Russian oligarch businessman who moved to the UK in the late 90s. His son, Alex, played by pretty decent James Norton, who may be Bond, more of that anon.
That's what they're saying, yeah.
Is the guy who's gone to the fancy schools, wants nothing to do with crime, is a very successful hedge fund manager. He has a murky father, a very murky uncle, but up until the point the TV show starts, he's lived a decent life, has a very attractive girlfriend, is doing all the right things, but as Al Pacino famously said in The Godfather, just when I thought I was out, they tried to pull. I have a cold, I can't do Pacino, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, actually, having a cold is the best time to do Pacino.
Yeah, I'm losing. But something strange happens. They start, someone, possibly close to him, starts planting rumours about his hedge fund. His uncle gets a rival assassinated. All hell breaks loose. He gets called into the dark side. And a very complicated plot unfolds over the first two episodes that I've heard, but a very good plot and a very watchable piece of TV. The writers have said that they had The Wire in mind. First episode, I wasn't so sure, but by the second of it, I really can't wait till the next one, next Sunday night, I think it is. It's really very good.
And when you say they had the Wire in mind, given that The Wire was quite complex and it was planned over the five series, the different aspects of Baltimore
yeah.
the show.
Well, I think what they're aping is that they want to have multiple plot lines going along that will all intersect. And so far, it seems to be quite doing that. It's very global. It's wearing its kind of production values on its sleeve. Mm. Some of it's in the Middle East, some of it's in Cairo, some of it's in Prague, a lot of it's in London. And no expense has been spared on that. And at the start, there's all these weird plot lines, but they slowly coalesce and they're starting to make sense, even though they appear very disparate. And The Wire was a bit like that.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, your man, James Norton, he's very good as this kind of put upon kid who doesn't want to go down the dark side, but is reluctantly moving in that way and fighting, you know, in simple terms, good and evil, and trying to keep a straight face through it all. He's pretty impressive. A lot of the actors are actually Russian, which is good, and they speak Russian. So the way they get over the fact that people like James Norton can't actually speak Russian is that he was born in England, supposedly, but
yeah.
his father continues to speak Russian and English. So there's no dodgy Russian accents in it, really.
Okay, that's is the character of James Norton is based on a real person?
As far as I can tell, ever so slightly. And again, yeah. You have to be very careful for legal reasons
and or assassination reasons.
Yes. Yeah. Now, there were five or six families mentioned in the original book, MacMafia, and you're not entirely sure which family he's referring to in this, but by a process of elimination, you could probably figure out it's between two or three, because certain very big Russians came to the UK in the late 90s, you know?
Yeah.
The Bond thing is interesting because, you know, even before, you know, everyone's talking, oh, this is the much anticipated show from BBC and all, and you realise the people who are saying that are actually the BBC, and they're kind of creating this storm about it. Now, it's quite justified.
Of course, yeah.
But this Bond thing, you know, they're saying it might be his calling card. He was in War and Peace, he was in Happy Valley, he was very good in all those. But he's front and centre here. Is he Bond? You know, the way Bond has changed with Daniel Craig, I think he couldn't be any worse or better than Daniel Craig. He's certainly very handsome. There's a suaveness to him. He's got the cheekbone. He's very English. He can do that. So possibly, yeah. And he's odds on favourite. I checked before I came on. I mean, I'm checking Paddy Power every day.
As one does.
But he's 5-2, I think, was the last one.
Crikey. Yeah, but that's so if they really go close. For a very conventional, predictable choice.
But I think they're heading that way. Like the Idris Elba thing, which I thought was a great idea because he would really, he'd be a great Bond for all sorts of reasons. The odds have lessened on that for some reason. I'm not entirely sure. So it's all pointing in this direction, it would say. But okay. MacMafia is really good and really, really worth watching, I would say. And what I like about it is, you know, we don't have the BBC player in this part of the world, so you're going to have to tune in next week to watch it in that old-fashioned way of watching TV when it happens, which was nice for a change.
And given that what it's based on, and it is based on a non-fiction book, so it's not like James Bond in the sense that you have ridiculous baddies.
No.
This is a fairly realistic portrait of international crime and the way it works.
Absolutely. And the writing is, you know, if you say to someone this is based on a non-fiction book about Russian crime lords, you know, how are you going to make that dramatic? The writing is brilliant. They've made it really dramatic and they've obviously taken huge artistic license, but as you say, not to the extent where they're ridiculous baddies. I mean, there's one scene where they're in Versailles and Alex goes there, the guy, James Norton, goes and meets the guy who possibly tried to assassinate to kill someone in his family, and they're in Versailles and he's pointing out to him, this is the peace hall and this is the war hall, which one will you take? There are moments of that, but not too many.
Yeah.
You know, it's very realistic. And there's the guy, Luke Garding, I think his name is, who was involved in all the stuff that's happened with the KGB in Russia. He's a Guardian journalist. He was sleeping on park benches and Putin and all those people were after him. You see a lot in the Guardian. And he said, I think it was yesterday, you know, if you think this is bizarre, you should see what really goes on with Russian oligarchs. So it seems to be pretty close on the money, you know.
Right, cool. All right. Right, a few bits of TV news now. While James Bond mightn't be going down the diversity route in terms of the new Bond, it seems as if Sherlock is.
Very much so, very much so. It's going to be a new Sherlock played by two Japanese ladies. I thought this was good. What if Sherlock and Dr. John Watson were in present-day Japan? And what if they were both Japanese women? Isn't that mad? What if they both lived in Ballyrack? Like, I mean, it's, yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be a Japanese one by Hulu in Japan and HBO Asia. I mean, they did something kind of similar with Elementary. You might have seen that with Johnny Lee Miller. I know a lot of people like him, where... What's her name again? She played Watson. Lucy Liu played his Watson character. And that works really well. So why not have Sherlock as a woman, I say, you know, and Watson. So it's an interesting twist.
But I suppose the further and further you get away from that, really all you're using is just the two names.
Pretty much so. So essentially this is about two cops in downtown Tokyo who have nothing to do with Sherlock Holmes apart from the name, I would suspect. I mean, it's only at the early stages. They have a few photos up. It's going to be in Japanese as far as I can tell. So we'll wait and see. Not that I say that there's no problem with it being in Japanese. I mean,
if it's in Japan, that makes
sense.
It would make total sense. But I mean, but is the name of one of the cops going to be Sherlock Holmes? And I would imagine if you're a Japanese cop in downtown Tokyo, everyone's going to go, Sherlock Holmes? Where the hell did you get that name from?
I think they are going to be called Sherlock, from what I've read.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Yeah. That's what suspension of disbelief is
exactly.
all about. Actually, I didn't get a chance to ask Brian Karim about it, but Trump was announcing he was going to was going to announce his kind of fakies, whatever he's calling these awards for.
Well, Stephen Colbert is calling them the fakies,
right,
which brings me on to my next piece of movie news. He has announced that next Monday at 5 o'clock he's going to, and it's aping because it's award seasons in the state, the Golden Globes is coming up, we're all making way for the Oscars. He's going to have his own Dishonest and Corrupt Media Awards. Now this apparently is going to happen, and he's going to announce who they are next Monday on Twitter, where he does everything else, and you know the people who've been dishonest and all that. So there's a large
CNN or a shoe in there, really.
One would have thought so. Now Stephen Colbert, or Colbert, pronunciations differ, he's gotten straight in it and wants to be nominated and has put forward his candidacy for all categories, including Outstanding Achievement in Parroting George Soros, which I really like, the Eric Trump Memorial Award for Disappointment, Smallest Button, which I like. Now this is a joke, but it's not that much of a joke. He's taken an ad out like a proper billboard on Times Square announcing his candidacy, and what I really like on it, he has quotes from people like Sean Hannity saying, "You are a no talent guy. There's nothing funny about a filthy guy like you." And all these people have said horrible things about him. So I think it was a really clever twist on it. That's the way he rolls, though. He's very clever. And he despises Trump.
Yeah, and well, it's good if you have those kind of resources that you can take out a billboard
in
Times Square. But I don't think Trump hasn't said there's going to be any categories. Rather than he's just going to name a few people he doesn't like.
He was exaggerating for comic purposes, I think, Mr. Colbert.
Right. And there's going to be a True Detective 3, despite the dire True Detective 2.
Yeah, I know. Now, I'd be hopeful about this. One reason is it's going to take part in the Ozarks. Now, everyone knows the Ozarks, probably, who watched
from
TV.
From the series Ozarks.
Yeah, but before that, there was a fantastic movie with Jennifer Lawrence called Winter's Bone, which you may remember, which took place in the Ozarks. And that really showed what a dark kind of twisted place it was, where 75% of the people stared at their noses all day. Writers have set things there. You know, it's a mountainous kind of place that, you know, liberal America appears to have forgotten. It's a good place to set a series, I would say. The premise for the third series is interesting in that it's going to be a case that troubles the detectives for their entire lifetime. See, people forget, Series 2 was god-awful for the most part, right? Series 1 was brilliant. It was one of the best pieces of TV I'd seen in a long time. I really thought it was amazing. So let's give it another chance. Stephen Dorff has been cast, and I think that's going to be pretty good. He's a fine actor.
Where's Stephen Dorff been?
Good question. I'm not the man to tell you. He's going to be back on True Detective 3, but I think this
he's
is going
to have to give up his job in Burger King.
Exactly. Putting billboards on Times Square for people. Yeah. So I genuinely, I'm cautiously optimistical about the setup of it, I would say. And I don't, there's so much money behind these massive shows now. They will be so cognizant of getting the right writers, the right people. They were burnt the second time round.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, let's hope it's good. Right. Yes. We do have two more shows to talk about after this break.
Many, many actresses were stupid enough to do
that
and ended up big stars.
Well, stand to them, Rachel. Stand to them. They had a choice.
I mean, I would be terrified if a man, I was in an audition and a man came, I would be awfully terrified. Could you imagine being, say you're quite a shy person, you've gone into the audition and this man comes at you, what the hell?
You say no.
But you know what's crazy?
No. She was not even that aggressive. It comes in a different way. It comes in like you're walking out to your car and he goes, "Hey, by the way, great audition. Just wanted to say, you should come by later and I'll go through the lines with you."
No, but I think the issue is he did auditions in hotel rooms.
It doesn't always come in this like,
I'm going to get you, yeah.
Yeah, it's not always the big bad cop.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about there. Whatever the hell those people were talking about. That's Celebrity Big Brother. The new series starts on Channel 5. And they've started it with a bit of a twist, in a sense,
yes.
John.
A twist, yes. Yeah. Or a pain or a sore, yes. It's 100 years since women got the vote, women over the age of 30 in the UK. So how else would you celebrate that than Celebrity Big Brother?
I mean,
that's the place to market. So the twist is that the 8 first contestants are all ladies of varying ages and varying degrees of things they've done in their lives, but So that's the premise, but it turns out now that men are going to enter the house from Friday, the first one being footballer John Barnes, because, you know, why not? You know, that makes perfect sense. And then a few more men are going to come along. So it's going to be women only for about 3 days. Now then, some of this is vague. The women are going to be allowed to vote the men off, but the men can't vote the women off for a while, but eventually they will be allowed. I mean, I just don't get the point of it. I mean, Celebrity Big Brother is trashy TV, and that's fine. People who want to watch that with, you know, god-awful reality TV stars who haven't really done much of anything are in this room. And if you want to watch that, that's fine, whatever gets you through. But putting this thing about, you know, 100 years of women having the vote into this cesspool, I just think it's a terrible idea, and it's pointless. And they're presenting it like it's going to be this sociological discussion about feminism. And like last night, as I had to sit through it for you guys for an hour, Rachel Johnson said to India Willoughby, the first transgender nudecaster, "Show me your tits." So like, I just don't know what they're doing. There's a character in a Woody Allen movie called Hannah and Her Sisters, Max van Sydow, and he's watching TV and he's bemoaning how bad it is. And then he comes on to the evangelist preachers and he says, "This is the worst." He said, "If Jesus came back and saw what was happening in his name, he'd never stop throwing up." And I just think if John Logie Baird came back and saw Celebrity Big Brother, he'd never stop throwing up, to be honest. You know.
Well, it's easy to be snooty about these things, of course.
It is.
And I wouldn't watch it myself, really. But at the same time, for people who might watch Celebrity Big Brother, who I assume were for the most part kind of teenagers.
Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure about that, but anyway.
I didn't know it's 100 years since women got the vote. It might make them think about such things a little bit.
I don't think so, because already it's dovetailing into, like, Anne Whittacombe has made comments. That clip there was referencing the Harvey Weinstein thing, and I know it's hard to hear with all the voices there. She was attempting to say, you know, it was kind of a woman's responsibility to say no if they were in that position, and people are annoyed by that already. So already, despite its high moral supposed leanings this time around, already it's descending into these manufactured arguments about things. Let's put these people in a room who we know are going to rub up against each other and irritate each other. And why not leave the women there by themselves for however long it goes on? Like,
because
why
you need
is
the
John
old sexual,
Barnes?
Because it you exactly. need a bit of bonking.
That's what I would have thought. So I'm not bemoaning Celebrity Big Brother as it stands. There's a place in the world for that kind of TV. Lots of people watch it. But trying to turn it into or masquerading it as some kind of sociological experiment is kind of borderline offensive to me, I must admit.
Right.
I'd love to know what listeners thought. So
and now, how many of them? So far of the current, I mean, and I'm including Anne Whittacombe here because she's done so much reality TV.
It's hard.
That's her job now.
Yeah, exactly.
So how many of them are actual reality TV professionals?
Well, there's a woman from, she's a friend of the Kardashians, was news to me. She's in their show, Malaki Hack is her surname, but she just seems to go
by
Malaki.
That's like a man that was in Celebrity Dating then last year. He was a friend of the
Exactly. That's enough
well.
To be, if you're a friend of the Kardashians now, that's a career to be somebody's friend.
Yeah.
You know, as I was going to quote Yates there, but I won't. Rachel Johnson is Boris Johnson's brother. She's not a reality star, I suppose. Then who else is in there? There's Johnson's brother I mentioned. Now, actually, you know what? Perhaps I'm being cruel. One of the interesting choices was Maggie Oliver.
Yeah, that's
now,
an odd one.
For people who, now, I didn't know who she was, but she's the detective in the Greater Manchester Police who broke the Rochdale child grooming ring.
Yeah.
Now, that's a serious job. She was a serious whistleblower and, you know, was told to go away. A fine woman, clearly. And I mean, I suppose you could say, isn't that interesting in that they're questioning what a celebrity is now and putting her in there? So perhaps I've been a little harsh and some, like, it's maybe it's good she's there. India Willoughby, the first transgender newsreader, I guess that's good that she's in there talking about the experiences. But as I say, she was showing her breasts only last night, so it has descended into. So,
and Rachel Johnson has, I know she's Boris's sister, but she's like also has a career as a journalist.
No, absolutely. She used to edit The Lady and stuff, but she doesn't seem terribly, like, you sense she's getting ready for a fight and a bit of crack. And they're going into the diary room already. And, you know, there was a thing about Anne Whittacombe's bed and there was a towel on it. And you can just see it happening a mile away. There's a lady called Jess in Plaza. That's who I was trying to remember. A glamour model who used to be on Love Island. So, you know, some of the men coming in rumoured. There's an ex-Boyzone star. There's there's some controversial comedian who's come, you know, so give me a break.
The usual stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I feel I'm very angry.
Angry old man, yes. John Fardy. Now, our last show of today we're going to be talking about, this is on RT1, it's the Tommy Tiernan Show.
Well, Tommy Tiernan, our first surprise guest is Miss Fionnuala Flanagan!
Oh, I was so afraid you wouldn't recognise me.
No, I recognise you totally.
Oh, you do?
I was watching you recently, I think, in some American yoke. I can't remember the name, but...
Well, they were afraid you wouldn't recognise me also, so they put together a clip, I'm just telling you.
All right, okay.
There you go.
Just they then watched the clip.
You didn't recognise. But then again, that clip neatly explains the premise of the show.
Yeah, for people who don't know, and I'm sure most people do now, this is a second series of the Tommy Tiernan Show. The premise being, which apparently he conceived in a hotel room lying in bed in Hull one morning, because that's what you do in Hull, is he would be the host of a show where he had no idea who the guests would be. Mm. Added to that, some of the guests might literally, even when they come on, he might not know. So yeah. Last year, for instance, Vogue Williams was on. He famously didn't know who she was. There was three identical twins from Louth who were on last year. Last night, Foster and Allen were on, who he did know. Fionnuala Flanagan, who he knew. And then the head imam in the Islamic Cultural Centre in Ireland.
Which most people wouldn't know.
No, yeah. Exactly. And he gave a great interview. I think this is a great show for two reasons. One, like, I think if Henry went out on the street and said quickly to five people, tell me your favourite Irish comedian, I think a lot of people would say Tommy Tiernan. I just think he's a great comedian. And I think the premise is great. The idea that you don't know who you're going to be interviewing. And I don't think anyone would nearly handle it better than Tommy Tiernan. And the thing is, what you actually get from the premise, it's not just a good idea. Good interviews arise out of it. Mm. Like in the last series, Christy Dignam from Aslan came on.
Yeah.
And he was delighted to see him. And it kind of deconstructed into this weird thing at times where he ended up asking Christy Dignam to sing Ave Maria, which was a beautiful piece of TV. Last night he got the imam because he was talking about being in a room in Dubai one morning and hearing the call to prayer. And he asked the imam to sing a bit of the Quran. Again, a lovely piece of TV. So I think the idea in Tommy Tiernan's hands works brilliantly. He said to Fionnuala Flanagan last night, she was talking about playing Marilyn Monroe. And he basically said, are you not a bit old for that? Because, you know, she's getting up there now, as she happily admitted. And then he said to her kind of out of nowhere, do you carry a lot of sadness with you? I mean, this is not tell us about your book and what you're doing in Ireland. Like, this is a different type of interview, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. And I think you're right that Tommy is ideally suited to do this kind of show. It's not an original idea. Clive Anderson, that you might remember from the 80s.
Who the Bee Gees walked out on.
The Bee Gees walked out on him. He had a talk show, Clive Anderson Walked Back, which is kind of almost a precursor, if you like. To Graham Norton. Yeah. And it was Clive Anderson brings people on, makes a series of gags at their expense. Boom. You're
and
done.
And he didn't know who they were.
No, he did know who they were, but they did a kind of a spin-off series on BBC Two where he wouldn't know who they were.
And it
didn't work. And it didn't work because the only thing Clive Anderson can do is make jokes.
Yeah.
He couldn't
do
anything else. But Tommy Tiernan can make jokes, but then he can ask you, do you carry a lot of sadness with you? Because actually there's a depth to Tommy Tiernan and a melancholic strain to Tommy Tiernan and a thoughtfulness to Tommy Tiernan. So he'd be genuinely interested in who the hell are you then?
Yeah, and also a bravery. I mean, after making a joke to the imam, he said, you're not going to blow me up now, are you? Like, and he bowed to him. But he got away with it and he smiled and it was a lovely piece of TV.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good on him. I must say, I enjoyed it. It's funny, I meet people and they're kind of mixed about it.
About the TV show.
About this particular concept. Right. Some people seem to make some people uncomfortable for some reason or another. Or maybe it's dependent on whether you're a fan of Tommy Tiernan.
Yeah, he does a bit of stand-up at the start, which is nice. And he ends with music. And he has a little sketch in the middle, three brothers. Somewhere possibly in Louth, they sound like, called the Gussett Brothers. And that's kind of funny as well. They were proposing selling Catch Up and Blue Movies from the side of the road last night. It's surreal but funny, you know?
Yeah, okay. My only quibble with the series last year, and I haven't seen this year, was that the set was awful. It looked like it was knocked up in art class in transition year.
Yeah, I guess. Unless they're trying to, you know, attention on the people as opposed to the set, maybe. I sound like I'm an apologies for it, which I'm really not, you know.
John, thanks a million for coming into us. John Fardy there. We're going to take a break. After that, The Intangible Economy.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances.
gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.